At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Lowe's knows when you're looking for reliability, the right brand makes all the difference. And now, Lowe's is the exclusive home improvement retailer for the Whirlpool water treatment line, including their Wi-Fi softener, under-sink filtration system, and more. With Whirlpool's proven performance and our everyday low prices, better tasting, better quality water is within reach. Shop pro-trusted brands like Whirlpool and more, in-store or online. Lowe's. We help, you save.
You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Counihan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have Leaf Filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A Leaf Filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install Leaf Filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, Leaf Filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Today, we are going back into one of the most baffling cases in recent memory. The suspicious death of Ellen Greenberg, and we're going to keep digging into this case because it deserves being dug into. Despite lots of people being silenced about this case, more has happened in the last, I would say, 72 to 48 hours as of this recording than has happened in the last 14 years because of the persistence and because of a parent's love for their daughter and seeking justice. For over a decade, the official ruling of suicide has defied logic, and we were just supposed to sit and go, oh, if you say that's true, it must be true. She turned into a zombie and stabbed herself after she died. That's essentially what the story is. Now, after relentless efforts by Ellen's family, a major shift has finally taken place. The very medical examiner who initially ruled her death a suicide has reversed her decision, stating the manner of death should be something other than suicide. With us today is retired FBI Special Agent Robin Dreek, former chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, to help break down the behavioral anomalies, investigative missteps, and possible motives behind the actions or inactions of those who've long defended the ruling. Start out here. When you look at the official handling of this case, Robin, from the initial police response to the medical examiner's ruling that seemingly was locked in for 14 years despite the overwhelming forensic inconsistencies and the fact that originally was homicide and then changed to suicide, and now they're saying, no, this is something other than suicide. What jumps out at you as in terms of investigative red flags in this whole catastrophe that is the case of Ellen Greenberg?
You know, every investigator has a kind of a different methodology for going about looking at things that go sideways, right? And mine as a behavior guy is I'm always looking at behaviors. I'm looking at patterns. I'm looking at patterns of the victim. I'm looking at patterns of potential bad guys. I'm looking at patterns of organizations, institutions. I'm always looking for patterns because patterns give us probabilities. And when we see a deviation from what we expect to have happen, that's when we kind of zero in on that and say, what happened here? Because that is a data point that says we have something sideways, and something sideways there most likely is where we go and investigate. And in this case, we had so many things that were low probability of what actually happened, that it makes no sense, like you were saying. So let's look at suicide first. All right. So we have a young woman that they said committed suicide after they said it was murder. Now they went back to suicide. Mm-hmm. And it was suicide by knife stabbing. So next thing what we do is, well, as an investigator, is we look at what's the probability, how often does someone commit suicide by self-inflicted wound of knife stabbing? That's extremely low. I think when I looked at it, it's like less than 5% of the people. And then I look at, you know, as they're claiming it was, what, 22 self-inflicted stab wounds, is high number of self-inflicted stab wounds. And then so I'm looking at that number, and then I'm looking at the location. Back of the neck. So the neck, when you're actually as a place, they don't even have a stat on the back of the neck. They have it for the front of the neck where the carotid artery is. That is the least likely place that someone actually kills himself as well. So in other words, we have data points of highly unlikely, and just highly unlikely. So the probability of all these things lining up and being true, highly unlikely. So why an investigator? So now we look at the other side. Why would an investigator keep investigating down that line? Because there must be an outside influence that we're unaware of. And that's the only conclusion you can come to.
I mean, the problem with this case is there's no investigation. It was, they ruled it a suicide. I mean, there's so many things that make no sense in this case.
Nope.
The knife, never fingerprinted. The door, nothing was fingerprinted. Nothing was checked for DNA. Nothing was looked at in terms of this being a crime scene or a murder scene. They just immediately labeled this thing a suicide. Now, even in cases where it looks like it might be a suicide, let's say somebody's hanging from their closet or whatever things, there's a gunshot wound to the head, and it looks like this is likely a suicide, they still look into it a bit just to kind of make sure this is what it looks like. This looked nothing like a suicide. So how did they go from this just walking in going, oh, suicide? That to me is just the most baffling part of this case. And, you know, how did they get there? Why did they get there? It doesn't seem to be a logical path for anyone to have ever gone down.
Well, because the logical path would be that you would not investigate it or state it was a suicide. So the only thing you can conclude is that someone didn't want it investigated as a murder. And so then we have to look at, well, what people are in this person's life? Because if there's, again, when we look at stats, the probability that when there's a murder or even assault that takes place, that person that's been assaulted or murdered knows the person, I think it's like 95%, we said this on multiple episodes, you know, I think it's like 95% of the people that are murdered or assaulted are assaulted by someone that they know in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we're looking at law stats, someone did not want to investigate it as a murder, the likelihood and probability of the potential person is 95% of that person is probably in their life already. So what they should have done is investigated as a potential murder. And the first thing you do is you look at the people in her life that there's an unhealthy relationship with, because then we're going to have a pattern of behavior most likely escalating in unhealthy to violence.
Mm-hmm. Well, we got a couple ideas on that, but yeah. There's other breaking news on this. Literally, in the last, like I said, in the last week or so of reporting on this, we have the medical examiner that has walked back their story, and there's another person who has come out and said, mm-mm, that is not what happened. A key piece to this story, to an alibi of this story. And we'll talk about that part in just a moment. I want to go back to the medical examiner, though. And why now? Why after all of these years, 14 years later, would this medical examiner decide to stand up and say, you know what? I think I was wrong.
Look, I become a stat guy on these kind of things because stats are probabilities of human behavior.
Yeah.
I looked at this too. What's the probability and likelihood that a medical examiner reverses their decision? It's also extremely low. And the things that will compel a medical examiner to switch their opinion is new evidence, public outcries, public opinions, investigations. You know, so there's other, in other words, there's outside influences. you know, human beings as a species, we are not very good at self-correcting behaviors. Because once we lock into something, we will double down on that belief system wholeheartedly, because to do anything else would say, I was wrong. And boy, we do not like admitting that we're wrong unless compelled by some sort of outside influence. And so in this case, there was some outside pressure that most likely inspired the medical examiner to reverse the decision. And because it took so long to do, you know, there was either an amazing self reflective event in their life at this point in time, or there's an outside pressure and influence that came in and said, you're compelled to for this reason.
I really wonder what that is, because if you go back 14 years, it seems a lot of these people were compelled to not go along with reality. And now they're compelled to say, more so dealing with reality on reality's terms. Simply, she didn't become a zombie and stab herself again. There's post-mortem stab wounds on her. How does that even happen? How does that even get into a report? How does that not somewhere along the chain of command, somebody goes, post-mortem stab wounds and it's a suicide. I think you better go back and re-examine this. But nobody did that. How does that... It seems like it shouldn't even make the smell test at the most basic of levels.
There's a lot of different ways that could happen. You know, I wish I could give it. It's because of this, and it could be an overworked system where you have a lot of individuals, where you have like only a couple investigators available, and they've got a caseload like this high, and this is low, you know, low on their. On their radar, because they were told, you know, like think about, so let's do our thought experiment. You have a supervisor that's overseeing a squad of people, low number of people. They have a caseload like this, people that execute the case like this. They get a report in that there's been a death and that the medical examiner's office ruled suicide. They said, fine, done suicide, move on. They're not looking at details. They're looking at moving on to the next problem, because they made it easy for them to move on to the next problem. Because remember, that is what human beings typically do when they want to influence or persuade people to an action. They make it easy for them to take that action. That's one possibility. Another possibility is that, yeah, it's a big cabal. You know, everyone's in on it. They're protecting someone and they don't want it to come out in true light. That's another possibility. There's always a lot of possibilities that come in here. But when there's smoke, there's going to be fire somewhere, and that's what they should be doing right now, is investigating. All right, this doesn't make any sense. It passes zero smell test on a lot of levels, both behaviorally, investigatively, and now we just have to see where the chips fall. But you're right. Why now? Why all these people? And I think because I'll give a lot of all the credit in the world to the family.
Yeah.
Family, they know their daughter, and a lot of people say, my daughter or my child would never do this. Well, there's no pattern of behavior that she would have.
No, it's just been said, she was suffering. She had some mental health issues going on. She was taking this. Okay, great. I understand that. I understand suicide. But this was not a suicide. So if it was a suicide, case closed. Okay, bad place, made a bad decision, and that's the end of it. She didn't. That's not what happened. That's just the thing. And I'm not saying who did this to her. I have no idea who did this to her. There's certainly people that should be answering some questions and should be looked into. It's very bizarre behavior to suddenly, you know, not care about investigating the death of someone you are very, very close to and just kind of walk away going, oh, I accept that, even though it's the most bizarre story in the world. But I don't know, people have weird reactions to things. A key piece of information has also come down just in the last 24 hours of this recording. News Nation is reporting from Brian Enten that the doorman, who has long been said, I believe, and in reports that he had gone up to the door to break it down with the ex-fiance, or watched the ex-fiance do that. Big part of this alibi of, well, the doorman saw me do it. Apparently nobody looked into that part either, which I'm not really that surprised by, considering they didn't look into the knife, the prints on the knife, or the fact that she stabbed herself after she died. So I guess the doorman's not a far cry, but I was really kind of surprised to hear this. Brian Enten was reporting on News Nation that he talked to the doorman, and essentially the doorman has said, I was not there when that door got broken down. That is not accurate. So the story that there was someone watching this door be broken down, apparently not true, according to that new reporting by News Nation. And if you just look at the door, if you look at the crime scene photos that exist of the door, the way the latch works, it doesn't look all broken down, quite honestly. You'd have like wood ripped out of the wall and the frame, because the story has always been this door was locked on the inside. How could this possibly have been this way if it was locked from the inside? Well, it doesn't really look all that broken down. And the man who says that, or who originally was claimed to have been there by a third party, says he was never there. So kind of another big piece that kind of makes you go,
things that make you go home. You know, another aspect of this that I'd be looking at is, so we have things that don't add up on this one case. And as an investigator, the other thing I'd be looking at in hindsight is, do we have an organizational issue or do we have an individual issue? Because sometimes, as we're seeing in the Boston case with Karen Reed, we got a lot of data points saying we got an organizational issue, because there's other cases that have been that are really, really weird and sideways during a time period of that organization institution. So we might have an organizational issue at hand here that needs investigating, or it might have just been one bad cop. In this case, I would do the same thing. So I would look at this time period in which this happened, that they claim that she was, that it was a suicide. I'd look at other cases and other things that happened in that time period in that department to see if other things aren't adding up as well.
Mm-hmm.
If everything's adding up fine, then this is a case of an individual with an issue or an individual potential cover up or shifting of the narrative as opposed to organizational. So that's what I'd also be looking at.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Counihan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have leaf filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A leaf filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install leaf filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, leaf filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.